I wouldn't put it in unless I thought it were worthwhile.
In the course of time, they've done a St. Wenceslaus. I was talking about how you're smart enough. We had a man who was an expert in water heaters, and he put our installations in the church and the school and the house in such a way that when the floods were coming, he would disengage them and take them out.
Oh.
They would come back in and re-plumb them and put them back in. Otherwise, they would get all fouled up. You know, they have an enormous task just reconditioning those heaters. But after you smartened up, you know, and found that you could help yourself this way and that way, and eight other ways, you did that.
Mm-hmm. You had told me you thought that 36 flood had an impact on Tarentum, in terms of the future of Tarentum.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it did hurt the town greatly. I think it... have you seen any pictures of it? Have you?
Yes.
Newspaper pictures?
Yes.
I think that it was such a frightening thing. All over the western Pennsylvania area, even Pittsburgh, you know, there were actually deaths. There were fatalities, you know, all through the whole area. The whole basin was affected, not just Tarentum, but Brackenridge was too, and so was Creighton, and so was on all the way down, you know. Now, some towns were a little bit higher, like Springdale, for instance. They weren't so much affected, but any of the flatlands were affected greatly. Mm-hmm. The business section of Tarentum was concentrated in that, like a pocket in East Tarentum there. And there were lovely stores. There was a men's clothier by the name of Harrison's, you know. They were fine people, and no one expected this to be as bad as it was. And there were tremendous losses. Some of the people lost so much that they couldn't recover business-wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just that bad. Now, I have to put a footnote here. To some extent, this interpretation about the reality and the importance of the flood is partly mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you said that.
I see it that way as I look back, because to me, the beginning of the exodus, the departure from Tarentum, and the establishment of new centers like, you know, the shopping marts and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think that a lot of the spirit of Tarentum was broken, and a lot of gradually, this didn't happen overnight, by the way, but gradually, you know, people found a better place to be and a better place to put their stores and so on and so on and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to confess that it's to a great extent my interpretation.
What are some of the other things that you think affected Tarentum?
Well, of course, the war affected everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could particularize on that. Just to give an example, the war ruined my father's business. Everybody went away and left no customers. And barbershop after barbershop closed. My father had to go out of business. It wasn't worth staying there. There wasn't enough patronage to pay the rent.
Where was his shop?
West Tarentum, in 7th Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Was he able to retire then?
No. He became ill. He had an accident one Sunday morning preparing to go to church. He had a bad fall. Very nearly died. That was in 45. And it took him about a year to make some sort of a recovery. But in December of the same year, he was re-injured by another neighborhood accident, another fall. And he died before Christmas in 1945. My dad's dead almost 50 years.
You said he apparently was young when he died.
Yeah, 54. 54.
Mm-hmm.
The issues are many, you know. It's a many-tiered thing. It's a question of residences. As the people after the war came back and started to make a little bit of money, the younger generation that was into their fresh new marriages, they were beginning to realize their dreams. And they would buy a little place in the country. They weren't going to stay on West 8th Avenue or West 6th Avenue. You know, if they could buy a nice little home out in Bakerstown Road or out in Fawn Township or out in any of those surrounding communities, even including Daytona Heights. There are a lot of people from Tarentum that are living up here in retirement, you know. And these homes that are built along Princeton and Dallas and and so forth, these all came pretty much about the same time. They were expatriates, largely from Trenum and Creighton and so forth. I meet people up here that I went to school with.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that exodus, you know. And given the opportunity to start with a brand new house that wasn't too expensive and a nice yard for the kids to play and so forth, you know, why not?
Mm-hmm.
It became pretty much of an invitation to go to make a fresh beginning.
And I guess the education after the GIs came home, they
had education. That was a factor, but you couldn't say it wasn't. It was decidedly a factor. Although industrial occupation was in those days fairly lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
See, hard goods, ice boxes, washing machines, cars. You must understand that during the war, all that stopped. There wasn't a new washing machine to be had. No dryer, and everything had to be replenished. All the stores had backlog, back orders. You know, sales for the next 2 or 3 years. So these factories were booming, you know, and people were making money. I was in McKees Rocks at a time that I know families that if they had 3 or 4 kids that had been in the service, and when they came home and went back to their jobs, hey, the family was well off. You know, if Dad had his work, and if 3 sons were working, and they had 4 wage earners in the family, they could afford a lot of things. You know, maybe right away, every one of the sons wanted to have a car, and so forth, and so forth. So there was a prosperity.
In Tarentum, later on, then there were plans for the expressway to go through the town.
Yeah, well, that got to be a kind of a tacky thing, you know. And as always, you know, there are the complaints that are absolutely justifiable and absolutely legitimate. And then there are the worriers, you know. And then there are the hell raisers, you know, that get into mm-hmm. think of that kind. Well, I know, because when we built the manor at St. Ambrose, where I was, we sparked such a community reaction. They broke all the windows in my car.
Oh, really?
Through a big stone. I had to do it the other day somewhere here. Through my bedroom window.
You kept the stone?
Yeah, stone. Yeah. And bad leadership. You get 6 or 8 people ticked off, you know,
yeah.
And they get people bamboozled into believing that their property values are going to suffer. Nice little ladies going around with clipboards saying to all these old timers, you work for this house here, your life savings are here, that high rise is going to ruin your property and it's never going to be the same up here. Every black man in Allegheny County is going to live here, you know.
Oh, so it was a racial thing.
Oh, well, not only just racial, but even a sociological mixture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when finally we outlasted them, and it was a tough fight, but when we finally got the place built, then the naysayers would even bribe you, if they could, to get Aunt Maggie. And Aunt Maggie was showing the first signs of Alzheimer's, and they wanted to get Aunt Maggie off of her hands. So now it was a great thing, you see. But that's the human way. They say that that Eisenhower program to put the national network of highways across, you know, the crisscrossing of the nation up and down from the Atlantic to the Western Seaboard, they say that today probably not 1 mile of that system would be built because there would be so many objectives. That's the way it is.
Well, let me just ask you, by way of summary, what you see for the future of Tarentum.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure that my judgment here would be a little bit affected in a way that I hate to admit is real and personal, but not necessarily jaundiced. I'm not saying this out of any anger or anything, but a year ago, 14, 15 months ago, when I knew that I had to retire, I was caught up in that spin-off thing that Association of Parishes.
Oh, yeah.
I started to look.
Where were you at the time?
Down at Spring Hill, St. Ambrose.
Oh.
I've been there 22 years, to the very day, 22 years. Anyhow, I started to look for property, and my sisters and I, we had looked for a couple of months and became very discouraged because the things we were being offered, asked to look at, were very old and not very well kept up and did not seem like good prospects. With the kind of money that people were asking, because so many people have the obsession of the gold brick, you know, this got to be worth $48,000, you know, this got to be worth $39,000, maybe it's worth $19,000, you know, really. I'm here a year now, and the reason I came up here is because in desperation, my time was running out, and the hourglass was showing that I better get something because I have to get out of where I am in a matter of weeks, a couple of weeks. So the real estate people said, we have a fairly decent place up there that's a little more money, but, well, maybe it's more than you can afford, maybe you don't want to afford it. I said, well, let's look at it because I have to find something. So I landed here because I couldn't find anything in Tarentum.
So you looked in Tarentum?
Yeah, we looked with my sisters. We looked at, like I say, maybe 8, 10, possibly even as many as 12 prospects. But none of them were very gratifying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now, if that is any kind of a weather vane, if it tells you anything about, you know, what the future of Tarentum is, I don't want to make too much of that. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a personal experience. But I don't see anything, you know, that's on the horizon that is terribly encouraging for the community. Right at the present time, it's living off the goodwill of the old residenters, you know, the old typical Trenton people. I'm sure that there are people who have the gospel of hope. I'm sure that you will find articles in the newspapers that, oh, this is going to happen. Oh, we're waiting for this to happen. But what has happened hasn't always been beneficial. You take, for instance, the bridge and the runoff of the new bridge here. And you look at that, my one brother-in-law oftentimes says, I never thought this would ever happen to Trenton. And what he's really saying is, it's a doleful message. And he's saying, this traffic just passes us by. It goes through here, you know. There used to be prosperous businesses there. There was a magnificent hardware store, Stock Deals, that any kind of want or desire that you would have in the hardware area, go to Stock Deals, that happened, or gone, you know. And there was in Tarentum, well, it's a good many years back now, but a beautiful music store, Windsor's, gone. I don't see any likelihood of these things coming back on that level. These things exist, but they exist elsewhere, you know. And we being such a very consumeristic society, well, there are two possibilities. Either you end up being a retirement community, or you play ball with a consumeristic concept, you know. You know, business, a lot of activity. The supermarkets that used to be in Tarentum, I think two or three of them are all gone. And with two of them, or three of them gone, I don't think anybody's going to risk putting another one there now.
You have to go outside of Tarentum for groceries, don't you?
They board a bus and they come up here. Well, there are two that are just in the same plaza, Foodland and Shop and Save. Both of them pretty active and both of them doing pretty well, I think. But they serve the purpose. I don't think that any investor would say, oh, Tram's a good market, Tram's a supermarket. I doubt it. Not in the foreseeable future. Now, again, I want to admonish you. I don't mean this in terms of sour grapes. I'm not a student of Tarentum. maybe there are factors that are really much more encouraging and enthusiastic than I see myself. But having been bitten and discouraged by that search for the house that didn't materialize for me, that's a personal trauma, if you want to call it that, you know, or a personal experience. Maybe trauma is too hard of a word. The other thing about the nature of the community, well, I'm sure that the churches, Father Grosko is doing very well, and he has a very, very lavish program there. But it's going to take more than one parish to, you know, alter the whole, say, disposition or the character or the nature of the whole community. It's going to take more than just the church. You know, he does well, and he offers the people so much. Both of the places here, and there are some establishments that are A1. Take for instance, if this is meaningful, the Duster Funeral Home. Somebody told me that they did 200 burials a year. Well, that's a going organization, you know. But it'll take more than one going funeral home to make a really viable community that will come back and proudly say, we're looking forward to some of our better times, you know. I don't know. And I would have to ask you to limit my judgment to simply what it means. It's only the judgment of one person. And maybe I should be conscious of some other things, but there's a very strong business community at the end of the bridge on the other side of the river.
Where
there are restaurants
Kmart
there,
is.
And there's a Farmore there, and there's a Kmart there, and there's a JCPenney's there, and so on and so on. So that, you know, with that availability and this availability, and in the city of New Kensington, and the talk of a new mall going in down below in Fraser Township, I wouldn't know. You know, how much I could foresee for Trenton. Maybe it's there, but maybe I'm not looking well enough or hard enough. But I don't want to, you know, seem to be wet ragging the thing. Sixty years ago, there were so many things that were different, you know, and you could itemize them one by one. The train service was different. You know. There was at one time a plenitude of gas stations. Just think how many people are now displaced and unemployed because of the changeover to the big, you know, massive station, one in Toronto, the Boron station. There probably were, 25, 30, 35 years ago, there probably were 15 gas stations at the time.
And fewer cars.
Yeah.
At least fewer on the road.
And they serviced and they, you know, did all those kinds of things, and they washed the engines, and they changed oil and so on, but they're not here anymore. Yeah. And I don't think they're coming back. The major industries on the periphery, the Creighton plant of PPG employs just a fraction of what they used to employ. And the purchasing power of the citizenry here is to a great extent pension money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, money that derives off of the employment that was 2 and 3 decades ago in through here. A lot of these people, they're retirees of Allegheny Ludlum or Aluminum Company of America or PPG. Not to speak of the other lesser ones, you know. When they die, whose purchasing power replaces that? I don't know.
Probably all we have are questions.
Pardon?
Probably all we have are questions.
Yeah, well, like I say, there could be better people with more knowledge and more vision who would disagree with this altogether. You know, they might say, you're too cynical about the whole thing. You know, there's another way to look at it. Well, hopefully so, if there is. You know, I would like to believe the town could do a bounce back, but in Tarentum, one of the great employers and one of the great business outlets is Nick's Chevrolet right now. Mm-hmm. There's a smaller one down several blocks below them by the name of Tio's, but yeah. Somebody tells me that he has just sold out. There will be somebody there. However, it remains to be seen whether the new guy is going to be as able or as competent or as meaningful as this fellow was.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Are you one of those, when you were a boy in Tarentum, were you one of those boys who played up in the hills all day?
No, not all day. We were up in the hills, but not all day. No, there were, it was a good place to roam, and, you know, the house apples, you picked those, and there was even the ball field that they used to have up on the hill. We spent time up there. I did my share, but I would not be the typical kid that spent a lot of time up there.
Mm-hmm.
My brother-in-law Al, he spent a lot more time there, and he could tell you more about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have any more specific questions. Is there anything else you would like to say?
No, it's nice of you to devote the time.
I'm happy to.
I wish that I could give you a more exuberant and a more enthusiastic judgment. But you want to be factual, I think, and you want to be objective and honest about it. Unfortunately, the town, it's like an older person, still nice and still worth contending with, you know. But when you start to talk about the prospects and you say, well, I don't know, you know, might be different next year. If that person gets sick, then the person will not be able to carry her or his share of the weight like they are now, you know. So what the future will bring, I wish that there was some way that we could predict a little bit more. There's nothing indicated about the rivers that would be like a river development. And you think about these prospects, and you think about new industry, and there has been some new industry, that plastics plant down there in Glassmere, but it's a sort of an industry that doesn't employ too many people.
A lot of the new ones are like that.
Yeah. They're designed that way.
Mm-hmm.
The technology is along those lines, and it's going to get even worse with robotics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be done mechanically and automatically. I don't know if that, I doubt if that plant employs 100 people. And they have several trucks, and of course a truck driver. I may be wrong, but I never talked to anybody who's on the inside of it. It just seems to me, I don't see people, lots of people moving around there, so my judgment is, I would be surprised if they employed more than that. But that isn't a story that's unique to Tarentum. It's, you know, middle America has been sagging a good little bit.
The Northeast especially. It's even the story, in some way, of our religious communities. It's not the only story of it, but it's...
Well, it's the lesson of history, the cycle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have your startup time, and you have your growth time, and you have your climactic time, whenever everything is buzzing and fruitful and productive, and then you have the first signs of decline. And you have, somebody asked me yesterday about the religious community, what I thought would happen in 20 years or 25 years, and I said, I don't know. I don't even know whether anybody knows, you know, but I said, one of the possibilities that seems to be beckoning is the likelihood of mergers. In some interesting way, maybe let them retain their own specific characteristics, you know, the distinguishing marks, but bridge it together administratively so that there's, you know, the maintenance of all these mother houses and so forth, upkeep of property and so forth. But I don't know. I don't know if anybody has the answer.
No one knows. We really don't know. We do have new life. It's not like it was before. Many of the people who are entering are in their 40s, even 50s.
They don't stay, though. You know, the locations, if you really get down to brass tacks and talk about religious communities, and if you polled all the ones that exist here locally, I mean by locally, within a range of 50 miles in this area here, I would doubt whether together they have 5 locations a year. And the mortality in the meantime, I hesitate to open the Pittsburgh Catholic because so many weeks, there are four and five nuns that have died that week. Mm-hmm. You know. I have been rather close to the Divine Providence people. In fact, I called the sister that she wanted me to try to do something for them, which I can't, but for a long, long time, for about 15 years, I tried to go to all their funerals, you know. Mm-hmm. And they would have 6, 7, 8, 9 funerals a year. And maybe one vocation, or maybe not even that, maybe one prospect, maybe one in 2 years. And that's troubling, you know. That's not a good statistic.
Not a good statistic, and yet when you look at the people who are coming to the community, that's so encouraging too. I mean, the goodness of these people is so encouraging.
Well, I know what you're saying, and I think that you hold this out too in terms of the priesthood. The delayed vocation is maybe an area that we've only begun to tap. You know? Mm-hmm. The guy that might be 42 and still could maybe spend 20 years in the priesthood, you know. Maybe there are a lot of those guys that could be convinced, and maybe the apparent shortages aren't nearly as vexing and bothersome as they seem to be. Maybe we're just not even using the priesthood the way it should be used. Maybe there are a lot of things that the priest don't need to do that somebody else can do, and so on. All of that is true, you know, but it's a QED, quaterra demonstrandum. We still have to see this verified. You know. We can talk about the possibilities. In the meantime, we have to wait to see whether experience will bear this out, whether it will be as we hope it might be. I think that, too, that we gradually learn how to use the aging vocation better. I'm not sure that we've come to the last chapter of that study or that consideration. I think that, just centering on myself again, I've been here a year now, almost a year to the day, and I feel that to some extent, retirement is a good thing, an opportunity to start to think about your eternal future, for prayer, that kind of thing. But still, beyond that, the human mind wants to say to me that I've wasted a lot of time the last year, that I could have been doing, you know, something productive somewhere, had there been other arrangements. And when I was in this spin-off that happened down at St. Ambrose and St. Boniface, there was only one way to go, and that was retire. Mm-hmm. And I was told the day that I went to see the authorities that they had nothing to offer me in any of their facilities. So it was up to me to make an arrangement, which I did. I had to make an investment in the home that I didn't necessarily want, but I have to confess that I prefer privacy to being with 30 or 35 other people. And I say that, again, not to be facetious about this or not to be flip about it. Had I wanted to join a monastery, I'd have done that a long time. time ago.
Yeah.
So I like the privacy, but in a full-scale evaluation of what I have done, what my life has meant the last year, I think I have to say that I could have been more productive. Mm-hmm. I'm relatively productive. I go and work at these weekend things, you know, and so forth and so forth. But I haven't had a stroke yet, maybe tomorrow, but not yet, you know. And in the meantime, it might be 8 or 10 years before I have a stroke. Mm-hmm. You know, could there be, should there be, would there be other things that I could be more profitably doing? Or a guy like myself, you know, I'm not the only one. You know, so that our patterning of the thing is not necessarily the last word. You know, we maybe have to think about some of these things a little bit more. Redesign even the idea of retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you follow me.
I think I do. I know in our communities we've talked for a long time about what we call pre-retirement, planning for retirement, and how we will continue to be active. And active according to what people can do. Not expecting them to be doing things that are too taxing for them, but also looking at their gifts and seeing how they can share these gifts.
Yeah, to give you an illustration of what I mean, and I don't want to be seen to talk like a child, you know, in some senseless and kind of a tenuous way, but Allegheny Valley Hospital is about a mile down the road. And I'd oftentimes thought about there got to be some things that I could do for those people. Now, not necessarily in ministry per se, because that's a hot potato, see? It gets mm-hmm. to be very sensitive. Mm-hmm. There is a chaplain appointed there, and there are backup chaplains in the parish that's over here. And you sure as heck don't want to stick your head in that meat grinder, you know, and get some people mad at you because now you're interfering, you know. How come you're in my turf? You know, this is my job. And, but aside from that, if it were possible to just sociologically visit people, mm-hmm. you know, or counsel some people, or follow up some people, or maybe even help them to go home with a new idea of how they can handle what is going to be their problem the next 6 or 8 or 10 months. You know, there ought to be areas that you could volunteer your time to do something meaningful. Not necessarily 8 hours a day, maybe 2 afternoons, maybe a morning and an afternoon or something like that. You know, but a lot of exploration needs to be done. And I think these fields to these areas.
Right, yeah, and creative thinking on that.
Yeah. I said to the one classmate of mine one day, I said, I was just tempted to go down someday and ask the people if I could have a license to push one of these carts around, you know, with these patients and take them out for fresh air. And he said, oh, hell, he said, you wouldn't be doing that, would you? And I said, well, I'm not so sure I would.
It's a way to meet people.
If it gives pleasure to the person, mm-hmm. and if it's a sign of reassurance, I don't know that I'd back off necessarily, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he said, you could find other things to do than that. And I said, maybe so, but I said, that's one of some of the things that I think I could do, push cart around.
Gets you into people's rooms, gets you started talking to them.
Yeah. Well, even you know, in parishes, like if you have certain skills that you've acquired, we did in my time quite a lot of landscaping.
Did you?
Yeah. At St. Bonaventure's when I was there, that started back about 1965, 66, and then consistently from 1972 onward to St. Ambrose, the manor, and the church plant, and the rectory, and so forth. The rectory that I left, when I left it, we had a nice yard. We estimated the landscaping was worth $30,000, mm-hmm. just in the rectory part, you know, the yard. Okay, Now, I suppose, without being hoity-toity about it, you know, if I said to some pastor, let me take over that part of your job, you know, and I'll get here a couple times a week, and maybe we can find somebody to do some of the more menial work, maybe the actual grass cutting or something like that, but I could, you know, supervise you, take that off your shoulders, and give you a good show, you know. Well, the first reaction you get, well, I don't know, you know, I don't want to take advantage of you, you know, which means stay out of my way. You know? But we have to accommodate ourselves. We have to get used to thinking along these lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see. I saw some roses down here on the side.
You put all that in since I came here in 1 year's time. There was nothing here but just some grass.
Mm-hmm.
In 1 year's time, you put all that.
They seem early. I expect roses later, like the end of the day.
Well, they're
pretty.
Well, kind lady.
One more thing. Let me ask you if you would sign a paper.
I would sign a paper.
That's right.
What's
and
the paper?
The paper I'll give it to you to read. This just...
Do you want us to include you in your will?
No, it isn't that serious. I'll turn this off, too. This is a tape for the Oral History Project, Voices of Faith, Years of Change. The narrator is Father Joseph Kopecky. The interviewer is Sister Sally Witt. Today's date is May 12, 1995, and we recorded the tape at Father Kopecky's home on Sylvan Avenue in Natrona Heights.